Senate Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Colleagues, Madam Vice Chair is out, but Senator Olson, I believe you have something?
I do. I'm filling in for her. She reads, every week she reads from When Janie Comes Marching Home, which are stories from our enlisted women military. And I'm going to read an article from Sergeant Pi Baumgartner from Virginia Army National Guard. When we pulled into Iraq, it was night. Everyone was getting off the plane, and there was a company waiting to get on the plane, and they were like, next stop, USA. And I was like, God, this is going to be a long year. I remember being really shocked that they had street lights and paved roads, because we were in Balad, which is a huge and huge build and had huge buildings. We get to these little wooden huts where we'd be staying that leaked on us all night because it was during the rainy season, which wasn't any fun. And then we had our first mortar attack. When we heard the first mortars hit and we could hear the sirens on post, that's when it really sunk in for me. She obviously wasn't in the infantry because it rains on us all the time. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can attest from a fact, unfortunately, that even at Balad in those places and those mortar attacks, because I had the unfortunate and distinct unpleasure to call family members of somebody we lost in a mortar attack at Balad. So with that, colleagues, members of the public, we're going to actually move straight down the schedule that we have. We'll be doing SCR 16 first, then SB 665 with emphasis on the Dash 2 amendment, then SB 808, which is the Dash 1 and 2 amendments. Then we'll be doing a public hearing on suicide prevention, which is SB 672, which is the Dash 4 amendment. And then we'll be having a work session at the end on the Dash 2 amendment, I believe, from SB 598. So to kick it off, Madam Counsel, so we're going to open a public hearing on SCR 16. Senator Thompson, if you'd make your way forward, if you would, please, with your guests.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, SCR 16 supports the work of the United Service Organizations, the USO, and establishing a welcome center for service members in the Portland International Airport.
Mr. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. Great to be here this morning. This afternoon. Chuck Thompson, Senate District 26. Thank you. I chose to chief sponsor SCR 16 as soon as I learned about the great partnership that has been formed between the Port of Portland and USO Northwest. For the first time since the United Service Organization was created in 1941, there will now be a full-time USO center at Portland Airport. These USO centers are not too well known to civilians, but everyone who serves or has ever served in our armed forces knows exactly what they are. The USO center at PDX will provide active troops with resources that show how grateful we are for their service by making their travel easier. It's important to me in this testimony to say how proud I am of the Port of Portland for generously donating space to USO Northwest. It's not something they had to do, but they wanted to do it. Now, traveling soldiers will arrive at PDX and be greeted each time with open arms. This is completely privately funded, and USO Northwest has asked nothing for us as a legislature to do for them. But we owe them the passage of SCR 16 to show how our gratitude for their hard work and great partnership with the Port of Portland for setting up shop in Oregon for the first time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Senator Ellen Olson. I represent Senate District 20. I'm here in support of this good bill. As a veteran myself, traveling, there was nothing better than when you got lost in your various different airports that you had to go to have the USO to help you find your way, provide you with comfort and a place to rest. And it's wonderful that Portland, Oregon can now be one of those sanctuaries to have a USO available for the fine troops that we have traveling.
Thank you. Annette?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Annette Price, the State Affairs Manager at the Port of Portland. I'm here today to testify in support of SCR 16, and we have appreciated the efforts of, and I think you may hear from one of these folks, Colonel Joe Williams, retired, and Commander Don Langang, retired, who he is the Executive Director of USO Northwest, and working with our staff over these last several months to put together this exciting opportunity to have a USO center at Portland International Airport. And as you may know, this will be the first center in Oregon in over 60 years. So that's quite quite a wonderful thing. The space will be approximately 650 square feet. The folks have been working with our team and others to get it designed and hopefully for an open later this year, later in 2013. And we are pleased, and I want to thank Senator Thompson and Senator Olson for their support of this effort, as well as many other of the sponsors. And we look forward to continuing our work with the USO, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I guess two USO stories. I've slept on many floors of many USOs in my travels around the world because there wasn't any place else to sleep. So having one in Oregon be a good news story for our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Coast Guards, service members that are traveling. And, of course, Senator Olson started out there with a nice mortar story in Balad that I reflected, but I had a USO tour standing in my headquarters when incoming was coming in, and it was kind of interesting because they were from the World Wrestling Federation, and so some of them were so big it was easy to hide behind them. So it worked out quite well. Senator Courtney, questions? No, I appreciate the efforts of both the good senators and especially the Port of Portland. And with that, we'll ask the USO to come up. And I think Mr. Smith is in the back there. He was trying to race up here, thinking he was a senator now. He can come up, too, if he'd like.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, and to the committee. Thank you so much, first, for having the USO here. My name is Don Langang, and I am a 24-year veteran of the Navy, so don't hold that against me if you're another service, Senator Olson. But I will tell you that the USO, it's a magical place. And for those that have taken time to actually visit a USO or you know what it means to a military family or just a young service member that's traveling through an airport that finally finds a place that it's an oasis for them. And so for the USO in Seattle, the closest south is San Francisco, and then the closest east is Wisconsin. And so you can see that it's very key to bring one down into the Portland area. And so we're very excited to do that, and I think this is just a wonderful stepping stone to where we need to get to service those veterans, those military members here in the state of Oregon, as well as those that are in southwest Washington. And we are ready to take on this project. We couldn't do it without the Port of Portland really making it very seamless. I thank Annette and the members of her team for doing this, and also just everyone here. This is going to be a great opportunity, and we just couldn't be happier to do this. So on behalf of the United Service Organizations, we just couldn't be more pleased to be here, and we're looking for exciting news as the resolution continues through the process. Sir.
Good afternoon, Chair Boquist, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and hard to be against this bill, I think, for any service member or veteran. USO is a home away from home, whether you're traveling through the airports or overseas. Other than a brief hiatus, I think, during Korean War, when it came back online after starting in World War II, they have been in every combat zone, bringing the entertainment, bringing a little bit of home and that kind of oasis and refuge. There's different models. And O'Hare, much larger airport in Chicago, has a lot of folks passing through where you need the reclining chairs when you get stuck overnight with snowstorms. Not the Air National Guard, PDX, is more of a beginning destination and ending destination in terms of an airport, and we don't have the heavy military presence. So it's a different size and scope that we're starting out with, and I think we've won over some initial skeptics based on a smaller proposal, prove the concept with volunteers, with donations, and see what kind of demand we get from the community. So a good, very thankful to the port and the USO coming both for the volunteers down here and the Northwest Network. So thank you.
Vice Chair, questions? Senator Olson?
I would just comment, Senator Olson's working on his Bob Hope imitations on the floor, so he might be able to come in today. And I do respect the Navy, and maybe the Navy will have to remind the former young Marine captain that we do have direct flights from Portland to Japan, which is, of course, the gateway for the Marine Corps going into Japan, along with the gateway for the Navy facilities in Guam. So it is a transitory place, and there are people transiting there, and we look forward to having the USO there. And we greatly appreciate you guys bringing this bill forward.
Very good. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Colleagues, we are at the at the 11th hour in this session. If everybody's amenable, I'm going to open a work session. And with that, I'm going to open a work session on SCR 16. Madam Vice Chair?
Chair Boquist, I move SCR 16 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves SCR 16 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Olson, Senator Courtney? Do I see any opposition? Hearing no opposition, so ordered. If you would, I think Senator Thompson would be delighted to carry this bill on the floor, I am certain. And so that's ordered. And with that, we're going to close SCR 16. We're going to move on and open a public hearing on SB 665. We'll be focusing on the Dash 2 amendments.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 665. You'll recall from a previous hearing on March 7, it relocates the State Interoperability Executive Council and the State Interoperability Coordinator from the Oregon Department of Transportation to the Department of Administrative Services. At the time the bill was previously heard, there was some concern about necessity for amendment for clarifying purposes, for technical purposes, adjusting the scope and the duties, and making sure everybody had adequate time to check it and approve it. Everybody met and achieved consensus that's represented by the Dash 2 amendment, which incorporates the Dash 1. The participants were from Department of Administrative Services, Association of Oregon Counties, and the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Thank you, Council. Eric Schmidt and Tom Lyer, if you would, please. And is there anybody else that would like to speak to this bill?
Bless you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Eric Schmidt with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm here today to exercise the opportunity that you've given us to urge you to adopt the Dash 2 amendments. As Ms. Ross said, it was a collaborative effort between ODOT, DAS, and the Association, and we look forward to bringing the SIEC into the 21st century and all of the technological and policy challenges that face public safety communications. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Lauer, a Major Projects Manager with ODOT. I'd like to echo Eric's comments. Also let you know that we support the Dash 2s, and I'd like to thank everyone's effort in making this come about. And now that I'm ready to answer any questions you may have.
All right. Madam Vice Chair, questions? No. Senator Olson, questions?
No.
Senator Courtney? Colleagues, we've had this. The Dash 2 is, of course, ready to move. It is not ready to move.
I'm checking now, refreshing the screen for fiscal benefit. Mr.
Amazing.
Chair.
We're waiting for legislative fiscal office. Okay.
Only one today.
Okay. Colleagues, we'll come back to this particular issue hopefully before the end of the meeting. If not, we'll end up carrying it over because we're waiting for paperwork. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on SB 665 and open a public hearing on SB 808, reference to the Dash 1 and 2 amendments.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 808, you'll also recognize from a previous hearing just last week on the 28th, or two weeks ago, the 28th and the 4th. It exempts from taxation the greater of $18,000 or 50% of the assessed value of home or personal property of veterans with service-connected disabilities of 100% and veterans' unmarried surviving spouse under certain conditions. Senator Olson is a sponsor of this bill and testified previously, also presented the committee with a dash one amendment that replaces the greater of alternatives with an exemption of a straight amount of up to $60,000. A dash two amendment is new that the committee hasn't seen, and it's available at the dais on OLIS for everyone. As a result of a conversation I believe Mr. Chair had with a constituent, it permits otherwise eligible surviving spouses who remarry for the first time at the age of 57 or older to continue to claim the exemption. They are standalone amendments that would be adopted if the committee is so inclined separately. The revenue statement has issued on a dash one. It's a revenue light, the same with the dash two, given that it has a subsequent referral to the Finance and Revenue Committee. There is a no fiscal impact on the dash one and a minimal on the dash two.
And just again, for the record, this goes actually is a referral to Finance and Revenue.
That's correct. And the reason for the public hearing today was because the dash two had not been previously heard. I see there are no witnesses.
Okay. Senator Olson, you want to address the dash one?
Chair Boquist. The original concept was that we would allow veterans to have something that's extremely similar to those that are on active duty. And we were at first looking at a 50% reduction in their rate, but it was confusing to the counties. So we inserted the inserted $60,000 of which becomes the exemption, and that equates to approximately a 50% reduction of their real estate taxes.
Just as a follow-up, Senator Olson, if I recall correctly, that recommendation was made by one of the assessors, was it not?
Yes, it was Polk County, and Polk County is in full accord in support of this.
Okay. And colleagues, the dash two amendment, which of course is to the relating clause, Mr. Mann of ODVA and I were batting back and forth. The federal law has a quirk in it that allows certain exemptions for marriage after 57 of a widow. And in going back and forth, that exemption is not in the in the state law. And so we would just be bringing ourselves in compliance with the same with the state. And then a widow that whose husband died, there's a year requirement and then an age requirement that if they remarried after the age of 57 that they would be eligible for a deduction. Those are the two amendments that are out there. We did circulate them among the committee members before. So it's up to the committee. If the committee would like to resend it over to the good Senator Burdick in Finance and Revenue, then we can move on. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on 665 and, excuse me, 808. Close the public hearing on 808. Open a work session on SB 808. Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Bocas, I move to adopt the dash one amendments dated March 28, 2013, and the dash two amendments dated April 9, 2013.
Madam Vice Chair, Monis Anderson moves to adopt the dash ones dated 28 March 2013, and the amendments dated April 9, 2013. Is there discussion? Is there opposition? Seeing no, so ordered. Madam Vice Chair.
Yes, Chair Bocas, I move Senate Bill 808 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Finance and Revenue by prior reference.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves SB 808 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Finance and Revenue by prior reference. Discussion, Madam Vice Chair. Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Fournier? Opposition? Seeing no, so ordered. And with that, we're going to close the work session on SB 808, and we're going to move to a public hearing on SB 762. Madam Vice Counsel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, measure Senate Bill 762 requires the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to create a public information campaign regarding suicide prevention, requires ODVA to increase breadth of service provision via alternative means in addition to using county veterans service officers and to provide materials and training to that end, declares an emergency effective on passage. There are a number of amendments for discussion. The culmination of those is the dash four. They build on each other and incorporate as they go. The dash four, which incorporates three prior sets of amendments, creates the program within ODVA to coordinate public information campaign and establishes the accounting structure. It also adds a voluntary contribution checkoff box on individual income tax return forms and permits voluntary contribution at the time of vehicle registration or renewal. The culmination of successive amendments actually makes a modification to the ODOT or DMV piece permitting voluntary contribution at the time of vehicle registration renewals only, not brand new applications for registrations, and only online that would link to ODVA in order for the person to make a contribution.
Thank you. Mr. Huddle, Amy Joyce, and Mr. Smith, if you'd like to come forward. And I just put on the record, John Huddle has been instrumental in trying to come up with this concept of continue to expand our services for suicide prevention. So I'm going to let Mr. Huddle speak first, and then I'll let the two agencies inquire in after that, and then we'll bring up some more witnesses.
Well, thank you, Chair Boquist and committee. I submitted written testimony a week ago, thinking it was going to be held last week, so I don't want to go over that. If you have questions on that, I would be happy to answer it. I did want to talk to the suicide piece and the integration of the two concepts. Suicide and reaching out to veterans with benefits are actually intertwined because as I looked at the research, and I have a background in social science research, the research suggests pretty strongly that suicides in veterans are fairly closely tied to things like PTSD. So as we reach out to veterans to make them aware of their benefits, or even aware that they have PTSD, because many of our older veterans aren't aware of it until they get to talking to others, we prevent the suicides. And so it becomes a circle of interest. I know that we have a very high rate of suicide in the country. It's difficult to find suicide statistics for this nation and this state because we don't do a good job of collecting those statistics. But disturbingly, Oregon ranks 7th in overall suicides, and that's very concerning. Military and veterans made up a little over 23% of the suicides. So you can do your own calculations. And that was based on an age group of 15 to 85. I wasn't able to desegregate it from 18 on, which is what I would have preferred to do. But, someone with a research background, done a lot of research, it's frustrating when you can't access good data, but that's what we got to live with. One of the things I found, though, is that Oregon doesn't have a suicide prevention plan for any group other than youth. And I find that very disturbing. We really have, for veterans and for the populations as a whole, we have to look at countries like Australia for the model, because they have a much better model than we do. But there's a tremendous need to develop a program and a prevention program to reach out to veterans. And not just veterans. What Australia found was that children of Vietnam veterans were killing themselves at 3 times the rate of the general population. So when I looked at all the data that was out there that I could quickly look at, it looks like we've lost at least 3 times the number of Vietnam veterans to suicide than those that we lost in the war. And as we see these successive wars that we've been in as a country roll out, we're going to see a continual problem with suicides. And my work as a school psychologist in the schools, working with kids, the reason I suspect, that we also have a problem with children of veterans committing suicide is that kids can pick up the PTSD from their parents' experiences. It triggers. So they get triggered into anxiety disorders, depression. I saw that after 9/11. I saw that after we lost some firefighters on the coast. A year later, I was still dealing with the aftermath of that with kids who were friends of the kids who lost a parent. So this is a mushrooming problem that we haven't dealt with as a state, and we haven't dealt with it as a nation. If we look at reaching out to veterans about their benefits, not only will it save lives, it's going to save us money as a state, because we have veterans using Medicaid dollars that could be used to, save the state or be used for other people when they could be on services through the VA. So Washington State saved $30 million over a period of time with that. So we've got some real incentives to do this. The struggle is funding it. And I really appreciate Senator Boquist working so hard with this and with ODOT and with Director Cameron Smith on this to get this going. It's much overdue. And so I encourage you to adopt the Dash 4 amendment and to give it a due pass. Thank you.
Mr. Smith.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cameron Smith, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. The only part of Mr. Huddle's testimony that I think I would disagree with is on the state data for Oregon on suicide data. Out of 2011 session, we did put in, it's not airtight, but we did get into statute that the medical examiner and public health do make a good push in terms of if it's a suicide death, making a good best effort to determine the veteran status and whether they served in combat or not. And out of that, pretty significant data, some of which very similar numbers that I've seen. For 2010, they do it in terms of per 100,000. Oregon as a whole is high as a state for suicide, and we're 17.1 per 100,000 for our citizens. That's roughly 41% higher than the national average and has been rising since about 2000. It's increased 21% since 2000 for all of our citizens. Of those numbers, 26% of our suicides are veterans. When you think of our population at large, is probably 9-11% of the state population is veterans. So we're double the number of suicides, though, compared to our population. And that's largely driven by the male veterans. So of those 26% of suicides that are veterans, 96% of them are male veterans. And it's statistically across the different age groups, most highlighted in the 18 to 24 age group, and then actually the older veterans, greater than 85. For a veteran male, it's 44.6 per 100,000, and a non-veteran male would be 31.5 suicides per 100,000 of our citizens. So a statistically significant increase. A lot of the data we've seen that's been hard to get is nationally, since all the states don't collect it in the same way. It has been a best guess estimate for a long time from the federal VA that it's 18 suicides a day. They've recently bumped up, given a lot of the states collecting better data, to 22 suicides a day nationally for our veterans population. And I think everyone recognizes that there's probably some significant underreporting in those numbers, even with, so Oregon uses the Oregon Violent Death Reporting System, both through the medical examiner and public health. So that data, we may not be as far along as we need to be, but that is a huge step forward, just knowing what are we dealing with here first and foremost. And there's, you know, this is a multidimensional, complex issue. There's no one silver bullet. The causes are diverse. Sometimes folks had served in combat, sometimes not. Often it's a link to firearms to successfully commit suicide, 55% by firearm, 20% by poisoning, 18% by hanging or suffocation. These are not easy issues to work on, but critical. These are back-end issues when our benefit systems on healthcare, employment, and education have failed. This is sometimes the scenario where our veterans face. So we are more than committed to working on this issue, and it really is cross partnerships. If the funding comes through and goes to ODVA, it doesn't have to be a core ODVA program as much as partnering with organizations out there, whether through the counties or our nonprofit community, really get the bang for the buck. Some concerns I think we'll hear from DMV, and I think we're on track in terms of creating flexibility for them in terms of any pass-throughs. I will note on the tax refund checkoff, we have a number of different funds that are part of that, and depending on the year, they rotate kind of the top five or six onto that highlight. And if you're one of those five or six on that given year, you see quite a bit of significant income coming in from the donations. Sometimes it's harder in those off years, in the 3 or 4 years. So you try to even that out. uncertain how much I think we'd raise through the DMV just because it's a different model that we haven't had before, but certainly something we're willing to look at and partner with.
Ms. Joyce.
Chair Boquist and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. Under the Dash 4 amendment, the DMV would put on its registration renewal website an indication that a person could donate to this fund, and they would click on that. And the way we sort of envision it is it would then pass through to the ability right there to donate to the fund. It would be a site that would be sort of owned by ODVA but run by the whole eGov enterprise that runs the websites for the whole state government. DMV processes about 1.5 million vehicle registration renewals every year. With the online, you're looking at about 20,000 sets of eyes every month who are going online to renew their registration. And I will tell you, DMV is doing everything it can to get more people to renew in that way because it's more efficient for everybody. So that number is slowly increasing, and we'd love to see it increase quite a bit more. There are a number of different ways that folks can renew their registration to bring this idea into those areas. It becomes exponentially more expensive and difficult, but with the online, it's a really smooth, seamless way that we think we've figured out with our partner agency for next to nothing kind of cost. So that's something that we would be happy to work with everybody on.
Thank you. And colleagues, I want to publicly thank the Department of Transportation because for once they walked in my office. Actually, it's been multiple times this session, thanks to Mrs. Joyce, and said, I got an idea. I think you'll like it. We might be able to make this thing work. And of course, anytime, not just OTA, any agency walks in and says, we're here to help, kind of get a smile as a legislator because you generally don't talk to agencies on good things, unfortunately. So I appreciate coming for that, and colleagues, this is kind of a novel concept that's never been tried. And of course, you know, a lot of times with veterans, these are, as the good Director Cameron said, we got to come up with new and innovative ways to make it work because this is kind of a new territory for many of us. Questions, Madam Vice Chair? Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Courtney? Thank you very much. Appreciate the three's testimony. Judy Cushion and David Stenzel. And colleagues, this bill obviously isn't ready to go. It's not scheduled for work session, but it will be the Dash 4 amendments we'll be looking at next week as potential. Ladies first.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Boquist. And Chair Boquist and members of the committee, my name is Judy Cushing, and I'm CEO and founder of an organization formerly called Oregon Partnership and now called Lions for Life. We're a statewide nonprofit providing substance abuse and suicide prevention and crisis intervention services. First of all, I'd like to thank you, Chair Boquist, for your leadership and your stick-to-itiveness on this particular bill, and we want to reiterate our support for the Dash 4 amendment. I would also like to thank Senator Courtney for his leadership on the mental health issues and bringing those issues to the fore and to the public's consciousness, because there is such a huge nexus between the suicide of the veteran population and mental illness. And I don't think the public understands that. You have my testimony before you, and I'm not going to read it. I just want to mention a few things because Mr. Stenzel's testimony is far more important than mine. He is a veteran. He is a volunteer on our crisis lines. As many of you know, we operate a 24/7 military helpline that is staffed by veterans. So we started that line because of the growing number of suicide calls we were getting on our suicide line, and began that line in 2010. We know that suicide is preventable and PTSD is treatable. We know that 30% of our veterans are dealing with PTSD, but as Senator Courtney would point out, they're also dealing with severe depression, and this is what our calls indicate. We keep data on our calls, and severe depression anxiety, mental illness, and suicide ideation are the top reasons for our veterans calling our line. And then down the way are things like financial stress, jobs, et cetera. But they're traumatized and stressed. Last year, we received 8,400 calls on our military helpline. You know that we're a backup center for the National VA line. We work very, very closely with the VA line, but I want to talk to you about the Oregon data in particular. Of those calls, now the National VA advertises their line, and as a backup center, then therefore we get some rollover calls, but the preponderance of those calls were from Oregon. We also have calls that come directly to our military helpline. Of the over 1,800 calls we got from Oregon soldiers and vets, 175 of those calls were veterans calling with suicide ideation, with very serious suicide ideation, and had 47 of them had attempted previously. 62 had a plan, and that's not a good thing. And 14 had set a time to take their own life. When you have a plan and when you know what time you're going to do it, you know they're intending to go through with it. Many of our vets are so confused. They're at the end of their rope. They feel hopeless. They feel great despair. They don't know where to turn. They don't know quite how to access the services available to them, and that's what this bill would do, is help them triage the system and get to the Veteran Service Centers and the other veteran-serving organizations after having been counseled, if they go the route of calling a line. If not, we can help them get to where they need to get to, or someone will. So often veterans are very reluctant to talk about their mental health struggles. They don't want to go there. There's so much stigma attached to mental illness. So our job is, we see it, is to educate the public, and that's what this bill, what you're trying to do, is to create a public awareness and destigmatize the veterans who are struggling. We want to say that we're here to help and here to support you in any effort around this. The more veterans and their family members know, and I want to reiterate something that Mr. Huddle stated in his testimony, we know that military kids are at risk. We happen to run a youth line with texting, and kids feel very comfortable telling us how close they are to taking their own lives via text, and what their problems are, and how alone they feel, and how hopeless they feel. And when we get texts and calls from kids, it breaks your heart. You're wanting to know. They don't want to tell their parents. They don't know what's wrong with their dad or mom who came back from the war and came back a different person, or their dad who was a vet from a previous war, a Gulf War, or even the Vietnam War, and they couldn't ever understand what had happened. We just have to find a better way to create a system, a safety net, and a system that is really going to help people. So with that, I will close my testimony and say that we urge you, I don't think we need to urge you, you're already very aware of how important this bill is. I hope you'll consider if there's a way to consider more certain funding, a new license plate, I don't know what it might be, but this need is huge. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Judy. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is David Stenzel, and as Judy said, I am a Vietnam veteran that was diagnosed with PTSD. And I've been on the Lifeline for a couple of years now as a volunteer. And so I take the calls directly. And it's heartbreaking. It really is. Most of these people that call, men and women, which are by far usually the men, they're at the end of their line. They just don't know what to do. They don't know where to go. Basically, an example of the calls, it rings. I pick it up. I hear someone crying or trying to breathe or trying to say something. And usually the first words are, "Help me, I just can't do this anymore." And, you know, they have a lot of anger toward the system and the government and the VA. And it's, I can't say it's always warranted, of course. They're confused. I think a lot of them have undiagnosed PTSD, and they simply just don't want to go through the work of trying to navigate the system. So a lot of them, I think, resort to self-medication and isolation. And until, God forbid, they take their own life. And when we get a call, I call it the lucky ones. I call these people the lucky ones because they have made the call. And a lot of times they just need to hear, they just need to be listened to. And I just basically let them get it off their chest. They feel, a lot of them feel very abandoned. I get, I was there for my country, now why aren't they there for me? I get that a lot. And I let them know that they are. It's really difficult. And like I said, I really truly believe most of the calls we get are undiagnosed PTSD calls, and a lot, as Judy said, a lot of depression, a lot of depression. I think, and I can speak for myself, they find it very difficult to deal with just the simple duties in life, just the simple things. So that's why they don't get care. I often get an answer, I'm not setting foot in that hospital. They want to put me on drugs or what have you. And we basically are we're the end of the line when they make a call to us. And that's the first thing I say to them when they do make the call. I thank them. I thank them for making the call, Like I said, I've been doing it for a couple of years now, and I just sometimes when I leave my shift, I go out, sit in the car, and basically have a cry before I can start the engine. It's a shame, but I thank God that we are there, for him to meet the call. So thank you for letting me come here today and listen to me.
Madam Vice Chair?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Stencil, for your service and for really doing a wonderful service for our veterans. Judy, I have a question for you. You took me on a tour of Lines for Life, and I really was impressed at all the modules and the computers and people at their stations, and I was extremely impressed. Can you, number one, can you give me again the stats for the military line that you have? And then second, are you getting any, where is your funding coming from? Do you get any funding from the state?
Last year, David and our team of counselors, and we have a supervisor on that line. We'll, on all of our lines, we have a master's level supervisor. The military helpline responded to 8,401 calls. We received 11,331 calls, meaning we couldn't answer 3,000 because over 3,000 because we did not have the capacity, which breaks our heart. We received 17,000 suicide calls on our suicide line last year. And then you also know we run an alcohol and drug line, in total over 40,000 calls. Our funding for our military helpline, we received no state funding, no federal funding. Right now our funding is through a small private grant and private donations. And where our future is in jeopardy in the next 60 days. Our future is in terms of our military helpline. We have to do something. We want to be able to hire. We need to hire more vets to be on that line. And you can't have a line if you don't have the people on it 24/7. So it's heartbreaking, Vice Chair Rhonda Sanderson. It's hard to sit here and talk about. I just got back from Washington, D.C., and had people telling me that we're known nationally for what we're doing because we're unique in the country. We're outside of the military, but we work closely with the VA and the military.
Thank you.
Sarah Olson, questions?
No, thank you.
Mr. Courtney? We appreciate everything we do, and we thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you.
colleagues will be coming back to this next week on the Dash 4 amendment. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on 762, and I'm going to drop down to a work session, colleagues, on SB 598.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 598 was previously heard on the 21st of March and was carried up to this point waiting for paperwork. It's ready to be worked if the committee is inclined today. It's the measure that applies to multi-line telephone systems installed a year or more after passage, requiring operators to enable public safety answering points to obtain street address and building name at a minimum from automatic location identification database called ALID for 911 calls. It exempts operators of key telephone systems, wireless telecommunications, and multi-line systems serving single-level, single-track structures of 10,000 square feet or less, requires diligent efforts by managers to ensure user awareness of 911 call procedure, requires operators to arrange ALID update upon installation of new phone systems to enable PSAPs to obtain 911 caller address and callback number, provides civil immunity for 911 jurisdictions and complying providers, manufacturers, managers, and operators, and it defines its terms. There is a Dash 2 amendment, has a minimal revenue impact, no statement issued, minimal fiscal impact, and no statement issued. It has no subsequent referral. The Dash 2 modifies definitions of key telephone system and multi-line telephone system and provides a broad immunity from ordinary civil liability. These were language that was suggested and presented by a couple of the stakeholders who testified at the last meeting.
And colleagues, we've shared the amendments, and we've carried this forward several times, and we now have all the paperwork.
We do. Okay. For which one? Chair Boquist, are we in work session?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Okay, Chair Boquist, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 1, 2013.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 1st, 2013. Is there any discussion? Not so ordered. Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Boquist, I move Senate Bill 598 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves SB 598 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion, Senator Cordy?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Monis Anderson? Any opposition? If none, so ordered. Senator Olson, if you'd be kind enough to carry this on the floor, I would appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
With that, colleagues, I'm going to close the work session on SB 598. Colleagues, we have paperwork, I think. Yes, our colleagues, we do have paperwork on SB 665. It is the 11th hour. So I'm going to open a work session on SB 665. Council?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this measure now has a no revenue impact and a fiscal light for further analysis in the next committee on the Dash 2 amendment. This is what we were waiting for earlier. The subsequent referral is to Ways and Means.
Chair.
I got it. I'm ready now. Purple.
Chair Boquist, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 2nd, 2013.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 2nd, 2013. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Boquist, I move Senate Bill 665 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves SB 665 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion, Madam Vice Chair. Is there also?
No.
Mayor Courtney, opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. With that, we're going to close the work session on SB 665. Colleagues, that's virtually everything on our agenda. I would simply remind you we're going to come back to the Dash 4 amendment on 762 next week, so it'll be carried over. And Senator Olson, I would ask you to work with Council in regards to the revenue questionnaire that I believe we're going to have to fill out on SB 808, if you would please.
We'll do that.
And with that, colleagues, we're done for the day.